quite frankly, it shows that I am a psychological subject worthy of Sigmund Freud.
Holiday season's upon us, gentlemen. What does that mean? Get your butt down to Bill Curry Ford, Northdale Mabry, just a little north of the stadium. It's easy access, whether you're coming down from Carrollwood, if you come across the Courtney Campbell, it's right there when you get on the Tampa side, coming up from South Tampa. Tremendous showroom, great values, and one of the greatest Buck fans you're ever going to see in Sean Sullivan. Pay him a visit. He's going to take care of you. The time is now. You're not going to get a better deal. And next year, who knows what the prices are going to be. Right now, you got to take advantage. Get your butt down to Bill Curry Ford. Sean Sullivan will take care of you. Get your holiday deals done.
You've heard us talk about pin chasers here on the Ira Kaufman podcast. Well, you know what? Now it's time to actually go to pinchasers.net and reserve a lane. Tuesday nights, any night, you pick the night. There is a great daily special at Pin Chasers. Tuesday is Pizza Bowl, starting at 9 p.m. Enjoy unlimited pizza and bowling for just $10.99. Shoes are always free. Tuesday nights, 9 p.m. to closing. All three Pin Chasers locations. Get to pinchasers.net. Look at all the daily specials. Reserve a lane. And, of course, make Pin Chasers your home for your personal or company, small business, holiday party. It doesn't get any better than Pin Chasers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, once again to another fantastic, critically acclaimed edition of the Ira Kaufman Podcast. We have the custodian of Canton, the sage of Tampa Bay sports. But here's a new one. And it was given to me by D. Orlando Ledbetter of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.
The man who's known for wearing a bow tie.
Yes. He gave you a new title of nobility.
He didn't call me Irv like Arthur Blank, does.
No, it's much better.
Let me hear it.
Uncle Ira.
What am I, an uncle giving out money to people? My Uncle Louie used to give me 10 bucks when I saw him when I was growing up. You ain't getting 10 bucks from me, DeKemper. Here, Lee, here we are after the Bucks polished off Ledbetter's Falcons. Now, Lee, I said in my column, and I'm going to stick with it, I thought it was their best road win in 3 years since they won in Kansas City against a very good Chiefs team. Now, somebody's going to say, now, wait a minute. They scored 55 points in Los Angeles. Well, you know, the defense didn't play very well in that game.
No.
I'm talking about a complete effort, and I'm also talking about a game that wasn't in doubt with 6 minutes remaining. Even Jason Light wasn't sweating in the press box, and you were in Atlanta, and I hope you can back me up on that without even seeing Jason Light. Now, I was at Buffalo Wild Wings, Tyrone Square. Good turnout. I gave away a Shaq Barrett jersey to a very appreciative fan who was sitting there with his wife. I had 10 discount, you know, coupons, 10 bucks off the meals. They were anybody I see in a Buck jersey, that's who I gravitate to.
Oh, no, now everybody knows your secret.
That's right. And next week, I'm going to be in Bradenton, Buffalo Wild Wings. Todd Wright was nice enough to come by. Lee, your name came up many times because every time Winston did something lousy or did something very well, everybody's talking about Lee DeKemper. In other words, he starts the game with the interception, and the talk at the table was, well, I wonder what excuse DeKemper's going to come up with. And what did you tweet after that first interception?
That was terrible.
Good for you.
Three-word sentence.
Good for
that
you.
That was terrible.
Now, I noticed, Lee, after the game, I believe Arians focused more on the jump pass interception and says, we can't have that. He's more pissed off about that one.
What made me upset about that play was not so much the jump pass. It wasn't that awful of a pass. It's who he threw it to. I mean, first off, this Dari guy, he has no business being on the roster, much less being on the field. And he's already screwed up Winston by screwing up an interception already. And, you know, people got mad at me on Twitter. Well, you're blaming the receiver on that pass? Like, yeah, a dude bats the ball up in the air for an interception. I'm going to blame the receiver. You darn right I am. That was another typical, I don't know if it was vintage Jameis, the last home win. That was vintage Jameis because you're like, every other play, oh, no, oh, yeah, oh, no.
Overall, though, he played a good game.
Overall, second half. But he made some passes in the second half. I was like, oh, my gosh. Like, dude's fearless.
I gave the collective game ball to the defense. I thought the defense was outstanding. Lee, every pass was contested. And if a guy had to come down with it, then Julio Jones or Ridley had to make a hell of a catch. That's what Buck fans have been looking for. Make them work for it. Not wide open.
Think about what you just said. It wasn't like they were guarding a couple of tomato cans.
That's right. That's a good tandem.
Yeah.
Now, speaking of tandems, Lee, the Bucks have a nice big problem on their hands. His name is Chris Godwin. And by that, I mean he's on a very friendly contract.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, just like Shaq Barrett, and I think Godwin's got 3 years to back him up rather than Shaq Barrett's got 11 games. So, you know, he's got more to his resume than
Barrett does. A body
of work. He's going to want to cash in, Lee.
Who
would? Now, I think not only is he a heck of a player, if he made the Pro Bowl, you and I wouldn't blink an eye.
No.
I think arguably he's had a better year than Mike Evans. I didn't say he's a better player.
Yeah, but that's saying a lot.
I think Evans draws more attention than Godwin. So you got to keep that in perspective. He's going to want a lot of money, Lee. The Bucks don't want to lose this guy.
Oh, of course not.
And you know what he's great at? In traffic.
Yes.
Catches in traffic.
He always has been.
A lot of guys aren't that good in traffic. That they rely on the route running to be wide open. He doesn't have to be wide open. And Arians, I think, rightfully points out, he's hard to tackle.
Yeah.
If he gets the ball, he's got a certain style of running or whatever. He's a blocker. Lee, there's nothing not to like about Chris Godwin.
He's sort of like a Himes Ward.
Oh, that's high praise.
Yeah.
I think Himes Ward's a borderline Hall of Famer.
Borderline. Now, I'm not going that far with Godwin, but he's sort of like, because he blocks so well, he's a physical guy. He was that way at Penn State, too. But what's interesting to me, and I actually had some fans come back at me about this. You know, I've written a couple stories. I've gone on Twitter. I gave Arians credit. You know, Arians saw Godwin's like, why do I want Humphreys? Godwin's a better player. And people come back at me like, anybody can see that. I said, really? Everybody saw Godwin beating 1,000-yard receiver?
Now, they're still looking for that third target.
They are, but the way Arians saw that he had a talent, he talked about it all training camp, all during underwear football. Like, I think this guy can get X amount of catches, and Arians is right. So not only props to him for identifying that, but even Godwin has surprised Arians. You know, Arians said today, he goes, I never realized this guy could break tackles. And he said part of that was it was underwear football, you're not hitting. And he's like, you surprised him doing that. So this has been a win-win for everybody, for Jason Light, for Arians, for the Bucks as a whole.
Lee, there's a lot of stats. There's a million stats out there. But here's one that doesn't
as
get
Dirk
enough
Cutter
attention.
Would say too many.
Too many. But here's one that doesn't get enough attention in terms of the value of a receiver. Catch rate in terms of targets and catches. And I think Evans is at 59%, which, you know, probably league average. Godwin, I believe, is 71. I mean, that is a healthy number, and he's targeted a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So, heck of a day. They ran the ball pretty well, helped by Winston. Good decisions on taking it down. I thought the O-line was outstanding in protection.
Yeah.
Lee?
Well, you're right.
And Atlanta had been terrorizing people.
Yeah, they've been getting a lot of pressure. Go back to Godwin real quick. What do you make of your Hall of Fame colleague, Hall of Fame voting colleague, I should say, Peter King, still says Godwin's an unknown?
I hope he's still not saying it now.
He wrote a column this morning.
Oh, Jesus. Peter, now come on. The guy's had two very solid seasons, and this year he's having a great season. Unknown. I'd like to be an unknown like that in Hollywood. And give Jason Light his props. It was a heck of a draft.
Yeah, third round pick. The thing that cracks me up about Peter King saying he's unknown, you know, I got to be honest, I'm not a fantasy football guy. I'm not anti. It's just not my cup of tea.
He was a high pick in my league, I'll tell you that.
Well, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
You know, how many millions of people are in fantasy football? Like, they never heard of Godwin?
Absolutely.
You know, Steve brought that up. And my personal favorite, Godwin has always talked about a Good Morning Football, which is a highly rated that football junkies watch. And he's been interviewed on there before, live interviews.
Don't tell me your girl talks him up.
Oh, she loves him. She loves him.
And Traeger, too?
Oh, yeah.
He's a closet Bucks fan.
Yeah, Traeger's a closet Bucks fan, I believe. I don't know that, but I believe
he must talk to Light three times a week, this guy,
yeah.
Traeger.
So to say that Godwin's unknown, it's like, okay, I would normally say that Peter King has to come off his ivory balcony in Manhattan, but he moved to Brooklyn. So you told me you're a Brooklyn guy. Where are the hoi polloi hanging in Brooklyn when they're out of touch?
Now, Lee, hold on. I'm getting a vision here. You woke up in an Atlanta hotel room on Monday morning, and first thing you did was order room service, and
nope.
The second thing you did was check out Kay Adams and see what kind of hairstyle she had and what she was wearing.
Tell the truth. Yes and no. I can do that on Twitter. So I did it on Twitter.
There you go.
Yeah, they put her videos up on Twitter. Good Morning Football does. So yes.
You're not checking out her fingernail polish, right?
I'm not doing that.
Okay. But she likes the Bucks. She does like the
Bucks. Does she? I didn't know that.
And Traeger. Traeger's an animal. Now, let's talk a little more about the defense, Lee. Everybody in the secondary played well. Dean and Davis were terrific. And you know that passes defended category? Well, Lee, I've been looking at you know, these post-game sheets for 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
And generally, when you look under PD, which is passes mm-hmm. defense, you might see somebody with two.
Or three, maybe. Yeah.
Usually it's one.
Yes.
And all of a sudden, Dean's got like four or five a game.
I know.
That's 3 weeks in a row. Look, I'm not saying the guy's going to be the second coming of Darrell Revis. I didn't say Darrell. But the guy's improving, Lee.
He's only started two games.
And Lee, let me throw out a name close to your heart. Devin White's coming on.
He is. Still needs some work and pass defense.
He does.
As far as tackling, yeah, he's doing a good job doing that. He's doing a really good job. You know, finally.
And his blitzing skills.
Yeah, I don't know if you can hear the Angels. Finally. What all Aaron's been talking about since he drafted the guy. Like, oh, we don't have to go out and get a pass rusher. We're going to have Devin White blitz
right
up the middle. Direct quote from Pat Kerwin. You're going to blitz Drew Brees up the middle? Good luck with that. But finally, we saw it. I was starting to think we got conned. Like, wait a minute. You said you were going to use this guy doing this, and you haven't. And finally, 11th game of the season? But he's coming along. I think he has more tackles than Devin Bush, who started out the season on fire.
Now, Lee, under the umbrella of full disclosure, and you're a full disclosure man, you know.
No, I'm not going to say your name.
No, Lee?
Now, Ira's full disclosure is coming. Who knows what that could be? I have no idea. But what I do know is at BillCurryFord.com, Black Friday is on. It goes on now through December 2nd. All the offers are laid out for you at BillCurryFord.com or head to the dealership just north of the stadium on Dale Mabry Highway. Bill Curry Ford, a Tampa tradition for 60 years. And all those offers, 2020 Ford Explorer XLT, there's a lease for $287 a month at BillCurryFord.com. And remember, any purchase between now and November 30th, you can get an Amazon gift card up to $1,000. Get all the details, BillCurryFord.com. And just a reminder that Sunday you can watch the Bucks game with Ira at Buffalo Wild Wings in Bradenton, 4120 West 14th Street. Jaguars, Bucks kick off at 1 o'clock, arrive early, stay late. It's such a fun time. Of course, Buffalo Wild Wings has all the games on, and it's easy to get to 15 minutes from the Skyway Bridge. Hang out with Ira, watch the Buccaneers all season long on the road at Buffalo Wild Wings. We'll see you Sunday.
You can't get away with a Bucks game, even one as you know, impressive as Sunday's, without one little issue gnawing at you, and his name's Matt Gay.
Yeah.
Now, Lee, there's been five PATs that have gone awry. Some have been blocked, some have been missed, but that's five. Mm-hmm. Five is five. If the kick's blocked, it's probably his fault anyway. You know, unless some guy busted in clean as a whistle. So, Lee, I've said it before, I still trust him more on a 55-yarder than a 38-yarder. Yeah. I don't know why.
When is the last time in the Bucks had some rotten kickers? When is the last time a Bucks kicker has missed three extra points in a game?
Thank God it didn't cost them a game, Lee. They played so well that there wasn't a factor.
Still.
Most games are close, and, you know, it's going to bite you. It was a heck of a performance in Atlanta. I don't think too many people in that press box, other than the guys that were sitting behind you, representing the Buck brass, thought that the Bucks were going to win that game. I mean, with the way Atlanta was playing, Bucks coming off a drab game against New Orleans, didn't play particularly well on the road. But you know what, Lee? They're 3-3 on the road. Considering they had been 1-7 each of the last 2 years, that's progress.
Yeah.
Buck fans are looking for progress wherever they can find it.
Yeah. Now,
and Jacksonville is certainly beatable.
They're back to what they were before.
Now, how was your trip to Atlanta? How was it?
Oh, Atlanta's always a fun trip. I didn't drink a beer while I was there. You know, Saturday I was in the hotel room working.
They give you a decent seat in the press box?
Great, but you know, I want to go back to Jamel Dean. You know, he's doing so well with these passes defended, and he hasn't played that much, if you think about it.
He didn't play enough against the Saints. I'll say that right now. And well, I don't want to hear any nonsense that he can't play zone. I mean, that's crazy.
Well,
I don't know what Bowles was thinking that day.
It sure smells like he didn't play for a reason, and they don't want to let that reason out.
That could be.
It's almost like he broke some team rule, and they don't want to let it out of the bag.
That could be.
Because it makes no sense. You know, why would the head coach immediately after the game say he's got to play more? And then the defensive coordinator, first time he has media availability, that's my fault. He's got to play more. Like, you guys know this and you just still didn't play him?
Something could have happened the night before the game or practice during the week.
Yeah. That's what I'm – it sure smells like they're covering for something. It should, you know, when Arians Bowles said, well, you know, we're playing a zone, and credit to Jenna Lane, she dug it up where his passes defended are very good against the zone. So that was nonsense when they were saying, oh, he can't play zone. We were playing a man, and that's why he didn't play. I think it was, or vice versa. At any rate, it just smells. It just smells why he didn't play. And it just, to me, it just screams that it's cover.
Vita Vea shows off another aspect of his athleticism.
My mind is going on.
He is a good player. I'm not going to get into it whether he's better than Derwin James or a better fit. I'm not going to get into it. All I'm going to say is you can't say that it was a bad draft pick. Can't do that.
I want to say it was Mike Evans told me. He's like, Vita Vea may be the best athlete on the team, which is saying a whole lot.
I think he's
lot.
Close to being a Pro Bowl defensive tackle. I think
he's very
close.
Good. Well, you know, the thing about all people bellyaching about Derwin James, they're acting like light whiffed on the pick. He sure as hell didn't whiff on the pick. V is very good. He's very good.
And I don't want to hear any nonsense about a run-stuffing defensive guy. You don't need one. Yeah, you do need one. You do need one because if you can't stop the run, you can't play, period. Now,
is that true, though? I don't know.
I think it's true to an extent, and I'm not blaming Vita Vea for the Bucs' lack of pass coverage all these weeks. Yeah. You can't do that.
No. He's done an excellent job. He is working as a nose tackle. For much of the season, the league's best run defense.
Yes.
He was a key reason for that.
Yes.
So I always go back to his high school tape, watch him play running back. That was crazy. And then he talked about the dream come true. What I thought was very, very interesting, if not funny, about that play, Arians put it in on Friday, installed it on Friday practice. And even Vea didn't think his number was going to be called until he was in the huddle and Jameis looked at him and called the play.
He ran it very well,
Vea.
And they say he's got great hands.
Looked like it, yeah.
Yeah, it kind of looked at. Ronald Jones continues to impress. Looks like a different player.
I'm going to go off in a good way about Ronald Jones in a second. With Vea, that was his first catch in organized football since at least grade school. He said he never caught a pass in high school. He was, you know, he was starting running back. He never caught a pass in high school. And in Washington, he certainly didn't catch a pass. So he said the only time he ever caught a ball at Washington was in practice and tip drills.
He made Warren Sapp, wherever Sapp was, maybe he was in Atlanta, maybe he wasn't, but he made Sapp smile with that reception.
I'm sure.
And the next thing is to do the bunny hop when he gets
well,
in
the Beyonce dance. The Beyonce dance. Now,
what were you going to say about Ronald Jones? And I want to see him used more on the screen pass. I like that play.
I want to see him used more, period.
Period.
What on earth were they pulling him out of the game just when he was getting hot, just when he was getting 8-9 yards a carry, putting freaking Peyton Barber in there who can't get to you. Some guy twittered me like, oh, he's demonstrated that he can't fumble about Peyton Barber and this Dari character. Can't fumble. You know how many fumbles Ronald Jones has had in the last 6 years? Five years. 3 years at USC, 2 years with the Bucs. How many fumbles? Take a guess. How many fumbles?
Six.
Uno. 3 years at USC, 2 years in the NFL.
He carried the ball a lot at USC.
Yeah, so you can't tell me he has a history of fumbling. That's patently inaccurate. So I don't get that. And even Arians, when he got here, he talked about going with the hot hand. Peyton Barber was not the hot hand. Give me a break. 3.3 yards a carry? Come on. Don't insult people like that. I don't get it.
I'm wondering, is this the start of something good for the Bucs? We've said it so many times. Now, Jacksonville ain't any good.
No.
They just got waxed.
And by the way, for the people beating the table for any president of football operations, because Tom Coughlin had one good year. By the way, he ran off Jalen Ramsey. Couldn't get along with him. So, and what the Jacksonville Jaguars doing now? Right back to where they started before Coughlin. So let's hold off on before we anoint Coughlin as the next savior of a franchise.
The Bucs were much more competitive against the Titans than the Jags were yesterday.
Oh,
much more. And Derrick Henry just ran wild on them, and the Bucs contained Henry for the most part. You know, I'll say this about the Bucs on Sunday, Lee. They didn't look like a team that's packing in for the season.
No, they did not.
And that's always a danger.
Yeah.
When you're 3-7, it's a danger.
Especially when you have all those free agents. You know, I don't want to go off on a tangent or anything here, but, you know, I don't expect Shaq Barrett to be here next year. I want him to be, but I don't expect him. I don't expect Sue to be back here. I'd like to see him back here, but I don't think he will.
JPP's up in the air.
Yeah, it's another one that's up in the air. None of them played like, you know, they were waiting for next year. like they were done with the season.
And
like
I was worried about Sue's motivation. I was worried.
He was sure motivated yesterday for some reason. He played very well.
Yeah.
What is it Dumigo always said? They have the U-Hauls backed up or they have the airline reservations ready. They didn't act like that yesterday. None of those guys. So that was impressive. That Aaron still hasn't lost them yet. They're still tuned in.
Is there something to be said that this young secondary is going to grow in the second half of the season?
I'm going to go back to Jamel Dean again. Coaches see a hell of a lot more and know a hell of a lot more than any of us do.
By the way, there's no shame in getting beat by Michael Thomas. He's killing everybody.
Is he the MVP of the league?
I would consider him.
Yeah.
I would consider him.
Yeah. Coaches see a lot more and know a lot more. What I mean by that is, we'll get people, our readers, and I love our readers, don't get me wrong. And they say, hey, you guys watch practice. We really don't. They allow us to watch.
They allow. Yeah.
Yeah, which is basically 30 minutes of warm-ups. So we don't get to watch practice, really. So we don't know what was going on behind the scenes. Coaches do. We don't. What I'm getting at is, if Jamel Dean is playing this well, why didn't they pull the trigger on Hargraves long ago? Did he get so much street cred for that tackle on McCafferty? The Bucs basically said, we're going to give you another month to turn things around. Right now, it's looking really bad on the Bucs' part. That, while the season was still there to be saved, they didn't have Dean playing over Hargraves.
But you're not saying they'd be 6-5 instead of 4-7. You're not saying that. I mean, we can never prove that. We can never prove
it. I firmly believe that if they just, for the first 10 games of the year, if they just had an average secondary, just average, no Pro Bowlers, just average, they would at least have been 5-5. I truly believe that.
That's a fair statement.
I truly believe that. So, it goes back again. We don't know why Jamel Dean didn't. I'm not buying the excuses that he didn't play against the Saints. Not buying it. It just smells good. That's number one. Number two, if Jamel Dean was playing that well, you have to figure he was practicing okay. Well, why was he not playing over Hargraves? The fact that they stuck with Hargraves and I'll emphasize this, and they did nothing at the trade deadline to help that secondary. They caved in the season.
You're leading right into one of my favorite words, and the word that always brings a smile to Isbeth's face. Investiture. Investiture.
First-round pick money.
It's not easy to dump a first-round pick money, but we all knew he wasn't coming back in 2020. That was a given.
He played the last month, no way he was coming back. Right now, I can't say that. The Bucs were already of the mind he wasn't coming back. Because, again, he had a pick six against San Francisco. He saved the game against Carolina, and then he just disappeared after that.
I want to bring up a topic here, Lee. It has nothing to do with Vita Vea. Got nothing to do with the win over the Falcons, but it's Buck-related. I'm going to weigh in on this.
Not to be confused with pralines.
The Hall of Fame semifinalists will have been announced for the class of 2020.
you just pulled a Howard Stern
there's
there.
There's nothing funny about it. Lee, now there's going to be 25 names on that list.
No, I'm not laughing about that. Laughing about you burping. That's a Howard Stern deal. He always burps on the air.
What am I going to say? It didn't happen? It's better than a fart. Better than a fart. A fart I'm not going to live down. A burp I can. By the way, there was one of those senators involved in the impeachment inquiry.
Senators? I thought it was in the House.
Well, no, I don't know. He was being interviewed last week. And I don't know if it was CNN or somebody, and he was standing in the hallway, and he let one go right on the air. Boop! And it was unmistakable. It wasn't like...
Kamala, was it?
No. It was, I think, Eric Swalwell. I think that's who it was. Well, anyway,
he was Swole.
May I make my point to Kemper? Let's not get in the gutter with the Three Stooges over here. 25 names will be announced. We will be shocked and beyond disappointment if guys like John Lynch, Rondae Barber, and I dare say Simeon Rice belongs on that list too. These are the semifinalists. Now, for our listeners out there that are not familiar with the process, in early January, I believe it will be the first week, and of course, we're going to get the ballots, the Hall of Fame voters with the 25 names, and we will be asked to cut that to 15. That means chop 10 names. Everybody on that list is going to be a heck of a player. Everybody.
Yeah.
Now, if you do make that cut to 15, that means you're a finalist. John Lynch has been a finalist 6 straight years. Rondae Barber has never been a finalist. What does that mean? Well, that means you're not talked about in the room on the day before the Super Bowl. This year it'll be in Miami. You have no chance. You must be a finalist to wear a gold jacket that particular year. They're only going to pick a maximum of 5 out of the 15. That's fine. But Let's get Rondé Barber, first of all, on the 25, which he's been on 2 years in a row. He has been eligible 2 years to be a finalist, and he can't get over that hump, which it's kind of inexplicable, Lee.
Marshall than Lynch?
You got to remember, these are people that didn't watch Rondé Barber mm-hmm. and Lynch on a regular basis like we did. You know, so we hear things like system corner. That's the weakest thing we've ever heard.
Not only weak, that's an insulting.
That's horrible.
Well, the reason why it's horrible.
And I've heard Hall of Fame selectors use it on Rondé Barber.
Here's my reaction to that argument. He's quote-unquote a system. What's he supposed to do? Not play well because it's a system? I mean, give me a break. And this is a pet peeve of mine. I loved the 49ers and Joe Montana and Gold. Loved them. Loved that team. I don't think there's any doubt Joe Montana was a system quarterback. He was perfect for that system. That was Bill Walsh's system.
You're gonna ding Montana because of that?
No.
Of course not.
Lawrence Taylor was a system linebacker.
They devised the system around Lawrence Taylor.
Yes. Maybe one of the greatest players in that system that ever played in the football. Come on. No one's hammering him about that.
It's a real weak argument, Lee.
No, it's a weak argument. That's basically a reach because for whatever reason you want to vote for him. It's not an argument. It's an excuse. Oh, I don't think he should be on. Why? Oh, system. Every player is a system player.
I can't even list all the things Rondé Barber's got going for him, Lee.
I
mean, he has... When historic durability is the fifth thing that you say about a guy, because it's not the first, mm-hmm. you know, it's the fifth thing, and everything above that is even more impressive than 215 straight games or whatever it is.
I know.
I mean... That's a heck of a candidate.
Yeah, here's one for you about the system argument. What do you think Montana would have done in Coryell's system? Speaking of systems. Not much.
Ain't going to come close to what he did in Walsh's system.
Exactly. And matter of fact, he probably would have been backing up Dan Fouts. Because Fouts said that going, you know, Coryell, as we see with the Bucks, with both Cutter and Arians, they're like downfield. That wasn't Montana's game. Dan Fouts, yes. Joe Montana, no. He would have been playing behind Dan Fouts. Guarantee you. I mean, it's just the system stuff drives you.
So
Roger Staubach was a system quarterback.
Let's hope Buck fans get some good news in that regard this week. And you know, Simeon Rice saying he ain't chopped, but, you know, he ain't small potatoes either.
No.
He's the top 20 list of all-time sackers. He was very good in Arizona before he ever got to Tampa. He was outstanding in the postseason. He could have been the Super Bowl MVP.
Yeah.
You saw that game.
Excellent.
And you know this, and I certainly know it, is they asked for the MVP votes like 5 minutes into the third quarter. They're in a hurry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, oh, we got to tabulate. Can't you wait? You know, if they would have waited, I think Simeon could have won it.
Yeah.
Instead, it was going to be Dexter Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you know, he had two picks
mm-hmm.
Early and brought one back, I think. So that wasn't fair to Simeon. Ask Warren Sapp about Simeon Rice. Now, he didn't make Warren Sapp.
No.
But he made everybody around him better.
Well, I was just going to say, didn't he make that defense? He made a historic defense.
And he was famous for the sack strip. He was tremendous on with the forced fumbles.
A lot of people probably say, oh, wait a minute, the Bucs already have two. They may have three Hall of Famers. They only won one Super Bowl. Oh, part of that was they had a rotten offense. But another part of it was... That defense, and this is Steve Dumago has talked about this. That defense was so good for so long.
Yes.
I mean, the Ravens, 1 year, they were one of the best.
The Bears.
1 year. And 85 Bears, of course. 1 year. Now, Steelers, of course, they were like a decade. But the Bucs were like a decade. They were dominant. And of course, they had two good years, 99 and 2002.
You're absolutely right.
And so when people say, well, they only won so many Super Bowls. Yeah, but look at that defense. And that was dominant for so long.
That offense didn't score any points, Lee, for the most part.
No.
They didn't score. And, of course, you know the mantra, you know, Sapp and Brooks. Give me 17.
Now, Sapp played for the Bucks today. Just give me 30.
But you're right. That's also a terrible argument. Oh, I'm not going to put – they already got two guys on that defense. Now, you know I'm a Chiefs fan and a big one. Lee, there's six guys on the 69 Chiefs defense.
Mm-hmm.
Six, not two. Not four. Now, it was a tremendous defense. Again, 1 year.
That was only 1 year? I thought they were like a sick for a decade. They were really good.
Well, not like that. I mean, 69 was
not
special.
Not like the Bucs or the Steelers.
Now, look who they played in the postseason. They shut down Joe Namath in New York. Now, it was a terrible day. The winds were 30 miles an hour. Namath couldn't do a thing. And then he went into Oakland and shut down Daryl LaMonica, the Mad Bomber. Oakland had a hell of a team.
Yeah.
And shut them out, held them to 7 points. The Chiefs had a hell of a defense. They got six guys, Lee. Two defensive linemen, two linebackers, two guys in the secondary. How about showing the Bucs a little more love? A little more love, Lee.
Did they win two titles, the Chiefs?
The Chiefs won an AFL title
yeah.
in 62.
62, okay.
And then they won, the 69 Chiefs won the Super Bowl. Did one of our readers pass away, Lee? McAbee or something?
McAbee, yeah. I think I mentioned on the previous podcast.
McAbee? I don't remember you.
Yeah, McAbee passed away. His name is MacArthur Boykins. It was the man's name. I never met him, but I communicated with him on Twitter. Steve communicated by email. He may have been the most informed Bucs fan I've ever seen.
And not, what I mean by that, overly emotional, right?
Yeah, he didn't get emotional. And part of it was I would never would have guessed. I thought it was some guy in his 30s. He was 74. Apparently, you know, I learned this from Greg Allman. Greg Allman of The Athletic had spoken with a member of his family. Apparently, his two favorite things to do in retirement was get up each morning, have a big mug of coffee next to him, got on the computer, he read Bucs articles in the Times, and he read the comments on Joe Bucs Fan. That was his two favorite things to do. This was a guy who... He was starved for Bucs information. He couldn't inhale enough Bucs information. I maintain, I don't think there was a Bucs story written that McAbee didn't read.
Wow.
I mean, he read anything to do with the Bucs. Sort of like Sean Sullivan, our good friend at Bill Curry Ford, the first family of Ford in Tampa. And Sean is general manager there. And Sean is himself a well-informed Bucs fan. And I don't know if there's an article written about the Bucs that he hasn't read. And McAbee was sort of like that, too.
A sad day.
Yeah. He left behind a wife, a lot of children, a lot of grandchildren.
And he would comment himself a lot, right? He would comment.
Yeah, I think Steve counted up. He may have commented 1,000 times on Joe Bucs.
But it was usually a pretty good point he would make, right?
Yes. He was, like I said, very well-informed, didn't get emotional, and was always, you know, fact-based information. He goes, well, I don't know about this because X, Y, and Z. He wasn't a stat geek. A really well-informed Bucs fan, and by all accounts, a really decent human being. We're a lesser community without him.
Tomorrow I get to do the Identity Tampa 2 with Mr. Brooks, and Brooks is going to be wearing a tie.
Oh, that's what they want.
Because it's Victory Tuesday. He's going to be wearing a tie. Now, last week I wore the Shaq Barrett jersey.
Yeah.
I stunned Brooks. Brooks said, what are you doing with that? And I said, just like Barrett, I'm relentless, Derek. I always get my man. And then I gave it away. Now, Lee, you're going to be up in Jacksonville for what appears to be a very winnable game for the visitors.
Yeah, you know what? And Steve, Monday morning, Steve Isbitz wrote this, and I thought it was worded perfectly. The way the season's turned out for the Bucs, winning has consequences. I thought it was a perfect line. Winning has consequences. When the ball's kicked off, I want the Bucs to win. But you know what? In a big
picture,
about your
should
be
losing. What about your thing with the draft position?
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
It screws up the draft. Now, going into the game, had the Bucs lost, they would have probably been, at the time, today, if they would have lost, would have been picking sixth, which means if they wanted to go get somebody, they had the ammunition and the position to do it. Now, one win, mind you, one win.
Where are they now?
12th, which is middle of the pack, which is death.
See, that shows you how many bad teams there are in this league, Lee. You're 4-7, and you're picking 12th.
Who was writing this?
Wow.
Somebody was writing this. Someone we all respect, an NFL insider, and they said, you know, there are some years where the teams are just so many awful teams. Because they were debating if there's really parity or not. And they said this is one of those years where there's just a lot of bad teams, which would make the argument that there's no parity.
Think about that, Lee. 4-7, and you're picking close to the middle.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
No kidding. In the middle would be 16.
You can tell that. I don't think there's anybody in the organization that's thinking about draft positioning, Lee. I really don't.
They can't be zombies. They got to be thinking about their jobs.
They got to be thinking about their jobs. Certainly the players never think about draft position. Never.
No.
And we understand that.
Yeah, I remember talking to Altron Werner, and I can hear some Bucs. What are you talking to Altron Werner for? He was a great source, and he was always available, and he was always intelligent, had very thoughtful answers. And when the Bucs were chasing, there was the chase for Jameis that Steve and I wrote about, the chase for Jameis, and Altron Werner was horrified that they might lose the last game. He's like, look, even if we finish with the second last pick or the second pick, we're going to get a good player. What do we need to lose again just so we can get that first player?
Yeah,
and as it turned out, they probably could have gotten Jameis with the second pick. But he was like horrified that they would lose another game to make sure they got Jameis. And it had nothing to do with Jameis. It's just losing, just it sickened him.
Well, you were in the locker room. I think it became very obvious to you once the game started and certainly post-game that nobody in that locker room, nobody on that roster is throwing in the towel. You know what? That's something to be said for this coaching staff, too.
Yeah, I agreed. And you know what? I got the vibe in that locker room. Well, sure, they were happy they won. Don't get me wrong. But they were just giddy about Vita Vea scoring that touchdown. They were absolutely giddy. And that, to me, speaks that they really like him.
That's the first time number 50 held court. He was holding court.
Yeah, right? And just so people know, Vea is a teddy bear of a guy, sweetheart of a guy, nice guy. But he has a phobia about talking on the record. You pull out a tape recorder, you can see him tense up, like, oh, and he starts looking around, looking for Bucks media rep. He is so scared.
He's not the only one. He's not the only one.
He may be the worst. And what I mean by that,
Nassib's right there with him.
Well, Nassib is he's an odd egg, I'll just say that. But Vita is genuinely paranoid. Not so much of us. He's paranoid. He will say something that will get him in trouble. He's a nice guy, super nice guy, intelligent guy. I'm not saying anything that would discredit him in any way. That tape recorder that you and I are going to have, or our phone, to him is what a crucifix would be to a vampire. They might freak out.
They don't want to say the wrong thing. They don't want to say the wrong thing.
Well, he's convinced that he will. But that was the first time I've ever seen him. He was probably more open in the post-game locker talking about that play than he was when the Bucks drafted him and they put him up on the podium. I've never seen Vea that open and that, hey, but they had to prod him. I'm not going to mention his names, but it was right after Jameis' press conference. And a member of the Bucks media staff came up and was like, hey, just so you know, Vea's talking. So you mean he's going to say more than three words? And the guy busted out laughing.
There you go.
There's a gentleman who follows us on Twitter. I'm not going to out him. He's a good guy, good reader. He's got a beef with you. Or not really a beef. It's more like as they would say in The Godfather, a stone in my shoe.
I don't want to be a stone in somebody's shoe, Dick Hepburn.
This element of your past.
The guy's anti-Brooklyn over there. You can't be anti-Brooklyn.
No, he's not anti-Brooklyn. He's anti-Chiefs.
Oh.
And I get the impression from him. He came at me yesterday. His words, not mine. It says something about the Bucks. That the most loyal, most important source of information is actually a Chiefs fan. And I came back at him. I'm like, well, first off, I don't know what kind of point you're making. I said, are you trying to tell me Ira's information is tainted or inaccurate because he's been a Chiefs fan since he was a boy in Brooklyn in the 60s? He didn't respond. And I want you to, I'm giving you a forum here to explain. And I was kind of offended by this guy. You've been nothing but a professional journalist, no matter your fanhood. I know you're a fan of other teams. You're a fan of the Giants. I never even thought you were giving inaccurate information when you covered the Rays. Never has crossed my mind that you were giving out misinformation or being anything but a credible journalist. That's a wrong accusation.
All right, Lee, I'm glad you gave me this opportunity. First thing I'd like to say is, hey, how about acknowledging this? My team ain't done diddly for 50 years. 5 decades. Give me a break. I'm trying to get back to the Super Bowl over here. 50 years. 1969 Chiefs. Nixon was in the White House. Come on, you're killing me. The Beatles were still together. Well, what the hell's going on over here? Number two, that has nothing to do with my Buck coverage. Quite frankly, Lee, it shows that I am a psychological subject worthy of Sigmund Freud. Because the reason that I picked the Chiefs was my older brother picked the Raiders. This is during the days of the AFL. So I'm the younger brother. I got to pick the rival. Now, as far as the Chiefs-Raiders were concerned, Lee, it was pretty even. The Raiders had their days. Chiefs had their days. Chiefs were in the first Super Bowl. Raiders were in the second. Then the Chiefs won. The final game in the AFL, the Chiefs won. Beat the Raiders. Then they went on to beat the Vikings. So,
oh, I thought the Jets were that the AFC Championship.
No, then they played the Raiders. No, it was
the Raiders when Daryl LeMonica, the Mad Bomber.
Then he liked the Celtics with Bill Russell. I liked the Sixers with Chamberlain. He kicked my ass for 10 years. I mean, I'm getting killed. Russell's got 11 rings. Wilt's got 2. I mean, give me a break. And as far as the Giants, and he's a Dodger fan. So
is that from your Brooklyn roots?
Yeah, Brooklyn roots. And so I got to take the Giants. Bitter rivals. And every year the Dodgers would win the freaking NL and the Giants beat 2 games out. Every year. 2 games out. Short 2 games. And the Dodgers, you know, they got Koufax over there, and I got Marichal hitting the guy over the head. That's what I got. So give me a little bit.
He was the Myles Garrett of his day.
Give me a little bit of a break here, DeKemper. Thanks for backing me up. It's got nothing to do with what I think of Shaq Barrett and Jameis Winston, and I'm not comparing Winston to Lenny Dawson. Unless I catch Winston smoking a cigarette at
drinking
halftime.
A Fresca.
And drinking a Fresca. So
isn't
anyway.
That a classic photo?
That's classic.
I hear a guy at halftime of a Super Bowl smoking a cigarette and drinking a Fresca.
It's one of the great sports photos, and I'm going to leave on this note, Lee, and I've said this for a long time. The greatest sports photo that I have ever seen. Cassius Clay standing over Sonny Liston.
Oh, yeah.
Saying, basically, get up, sucker.
Yeah.
Get up.
Yeah, because he thought he was going to die.
The way that the photo was constructed is fantastic.
Yeah.
And Ali's like this. Like,
yeah,
you know,
like, get up.
Yeah, get up. So, Lee, get up.